Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello and welcome back. We come to you each day of the week with interesting stories from around the world. We present them slowly and with words that are easy to understand. That way, you learn important things and improve your American English skills at the same time. Today, we have two stories for you. Both are about things in the United States. First, Katie Weaver will tell us about a new shelter for special young people here in Washington, D.C. Then, Bob Doty has information about Hillary Clinton. Some people predict she will become this country's first woman president. But getting the job is not easy. You'll hear what some of her critics have to say. So, if you are ready, let's listen and learn with part one of As It Is. A shelter called Casa Ruby is opening in Washington, D.C. The shelter is for homeless lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender young people. Katie Weaver reports.
Giselle Hartsog is transgender. She was forced to leave a women's shelter.
They found out I was trans. They were very discriminating against me and wouldn't let me come back.
Giselle Hartsog left her home in Mississippi 4 years ago because her mother did not support Giselle's self-identification as a woman. Ms. Hartsog moved to Washington. She had no home. She often slept in the Central train station. She would have sex with strangers for money. Ms. Hartsog was arrested earlier this year. Officials told her she should go to Casa Ruby. She will be one of the first people to live there. Ms. Hartsog says Casa Ruby will give her what she needs, safety, food, and shelter. She says she cannot ask for too much more. The shelter is named for Ruby Corrado, who created it.
It's a house where, you know, people can be themselves and where they can be safe. And more importantly, for me, a place where they can be loved and where we can love one another.
Homeless LGBT youth can live at Casa Ruby for as long as 18 months. Larry Villegas helps the young people find work and a place to live. He says while they are at Casa Ruby, they must work to improve their lives. He says they will have duties.
There should be 35 hours per week of employment or community work or education or job training. And we want to make it in a way that it is always from what did you do today to get better and celebrate that accomplishment.
Mr. Villegas says the staff will help the house members reach those goals. Ruby Corrado says Casa Ruby will have 18 beds and clothing for those who arrive with nothing. She says her goal from the beginning was to offer LGBT homeless youth the same help that is given to many people in Washington. Shelter residents will be given health care and treatment for drug or alcohol abuse. Casa Ruby will become not just a new home, but the beginning of a new life. Maria Foscarinas works at the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty. She says LGBT youth need that kind of support. She says many public services are not available to young people because of their age. She says there are a lot of barriers to remove to solve the problems these youths face. Activists for the homeless estimate that 20 to 40% of homeless youth are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. That is about 400,000 American young people. Some of them are as young as 13. LGBT youth, who are rejected by family members, are at higher risk of suicide. Studies show those from highly rejecting families are more than 8 times more likely to try to kill themselves than those with accepting families. Some places that help homeless youth would not offer shelter to young people who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender. This practice was so widespread that the federal agency that funds shelters created new rules. These require homeless youth shelters to provide the same treatment to LGBT youth as other young people. I'm Katie Weaver.
You are listening to the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington. In the United States, recent opinion polls show that former Secretary of State and Senator Hillary Clinton remains a strong candidate for the presidency. She hopes to become the presidential nominee of the Democratic Party next year. Yet critics question her use of a private email account while she served as the country's top diplomat. They also are questioning the money-raising activities of the Clinton Foundation. Her husband, former President Bill Clinton, set up the nonprofit organization after he left the White House. Bob Doty has more.
Hillary Clinton met with a group of supporters during a recent visit to Las Vegas, Nevada. She spoke mainly about immigration, an issue considered important to voters in states along the border with Mexico. She expressed support for a path to U.S. citizenship for many of those who entered the country illegally.
Make no mistakes. Today, not a single Republican candidate, announced or potential, is clearly and consistently supporting a path to citizenship. Not one.
Recent opinion studies have shown that likely U.S. voters do not trust Mrs. Clinton as much as they once did. The main reasons? Questions about the money-raising efforts of the Clinton Foundation and her use of private emails as Secretary of State. John Fortier works for the nonprofit Bipartisan Policy Center. He says many Democratic Party members continue to support Mrs. Clinton.
What she does run on is having great experience, great support from the party, great support from all of the leaders, all of the fundraisers, and that's a very strong position to begin from.
Many Americans have known about Hillary Clinton and her position on major issues for more than 20 years. She has been involved in national politics since her husband became president in early 1993. Charlie Cook writes the Cook Political Report. He says that could hurt her with voters.
Thank you so much.
I think in some ways Hillary Clinton is going to be running against herself. I mean, she's got to show herself relevant in a 21st century. She's got to be more future-oriented than past.
Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders has also announced he will seek the Democratic presidential nomination. Mr. Sanders is the longest-serving independent in congressional history. At least 3 other Democrats are said to be considering a run for the presidency. 6 Republicans have announced they will seek their party's presidential nomination. 2 others are expected to announce their candidacies soon. They are former Florida Governor Jeb Bush and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker. I'm Bob Doty.
You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Environment and Science Report. The World Health Organization says an increasing number of infections cannot be treated because of growing resistance to antibiotic drugs. This resistance puts the lives of millions of people at risk. The WHO studied 133 countries. It found that no part of the world is ready to fight the growing threat. It says only 25% of the countries it studied has a thorough plan to fight resistance to antibiotics and other antimicrobial medicines. The study also found that many people do not know about the problem. And the researchers say many people believe antibiotics are effective against viral infections. The organization says this misunderstanding causes antibiotics to be used even when they will not work. The resulting overuse can cause resistance. Charles Penn is a WHO expert on antimicrobial resistance. He says researchers discovered that antibiotics and similar medicines are sold in many places without a doctor's prescription. He says this increases the possibility of overuse of antibiotics and increases resistance. The WHO official says urgent action is needed or the world will enter a post-antibiotic period. That means a time when common infections and minor injuries could once again kill people. Charles Penn says doctors also would lose the ability to treat many more serious conditions like tuberculosis, HIV, and malaria. And he says advanced medical treatments like major surgery will become much riskier or impossible. This is not a problem for future worry. Charles Penn says there are diseases and infections that no longer are treatable with available antibiotics today. For example, he says antibiotics no longer affect the disease gonorrhea.
Another example would be hundreds of thousands of new cases of multidrug-resistant tuberculosis each year. Again, these are infections that have already become very difficult to treat. And it's difficult to put a precise number on what will happen in the future, but if we don't act, then it can only get worse.
The World Health Assembly is now meeting in Geneva to discuss a global action plan to fight antimicrobial and antibiotic resistance. And that's the VOA Learning English Environment and Science Report. For more stories about agriculture, environment, and science, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Marcia James.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember.
In December 1941, the United States was at war. It declared war against Japan after Japanese pilots attacked the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. A few days later, Germany and Italy declared war against the United States. President Franklin Roosevelt quickly decided that America could not fight major campaigns in the Pacific and in Europe at the same time. He and his advisors decided to fight first against the Germans and Italians. Then, when victory in Europe seemed sure, the United States could turn to fight the Japanese in Asia. This left the Japanese free to extend their power throughout Asia and the Western Pacific. Soon after the attack at Hawaii, Japanese forces invaded Hong Kong, Malaya, and the Philippines. American forces in the Philippines suffered heavy losses, and Manila fell to Japanese troops. In February 1942, Japan's forces won a great victory against the British in Singapore. Japanese forces marched into Burma. They attacked Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, and captured the Andaman Islands in the Bay of Bengal. The Japanese military forces seemed too strong to stop. President Roosevelt sent some forces to the Pacific, and he began to rebuild the American naval forces destroyed at Pearl Harbor. But he sent most of America's military strength to Europe. The United States rushed troops and war equipment to help Britain survive against Adolf Hitler's Germany. American military leaders wanted to fight Germany quickly by launching an attack across the English Channel. But British Prime Minister Winston Churchill opposed this. He and others feared such an invasion might fail. So British and American forces attacked Italian and German occupation troops in North Africa. They defeated them and then crossed the Mediterranean Sea to attack enemy forces in Sicily. Within weeks, they pushed the Germans out of Sicily to the Italian mainland. The Allied invasion of Italy followed. Hitler could not strengthen his forces in North Africa and Italy because Germany also was fighting hard in the Soviet Union. Hitler's decision early in the war to attack the Soviet Union was a serious mistake. It divided his men and materials. His plan was to defeat Soviet forces quickly with one strong attack. But he failed, and his failure cost him valuable troops and supplies that might have helped him win the battles for North Africa and Italy. Germany's attack on the Soviet Union began with great success. In the middle of 1941, a German force of more than 3 million men invaded the Soviet Union. It captured the Ukraine, took control of Kiev, and marched deep into Russia. The situation changed the following year. Soviet forces under Marshal Georgi Zhukov won a fierce battle for the city of Stalingrad, now Volgograd. A great many German soldiers died from cold and hunger during the bitter winter months that followed. Zhukov's forces attacked the German troops and pushed back the invaders. Other Soviet troops forced the Germans away from the city of Leningrad now St. Petersburg. By the middle of 1944, German forces throughout the Soviet Union were retreating, and Soviet forces were preparing to push them over the border and invade Germany themselves. The fighting came at a terrible cost. Huge numbers of soldiers and civilians were killed. The fighting in World War II was not limited to land. Battles were also being fought on the sea. The main goal of the German Navy during the war was to prevent the United States from sending ships to Britain with war materials, food, and troops. At first, the Germans were very successful. There was hunger in Britain in 1941 because so few ships could cross the North Atlantic with food. German submarines were the greatest danger to ships crossing the Atlantic. These U-boats, as the Germans called them, could hide below the surface and attack without warning. The threat from German submarines did not ease until new technology was developed in 1943. Allied scientists improved sonar and radar systems that helped find submarines on the surface and underwater. More of the enemy submarines were found and destroyed. The Allies slowly gained control of the Atlantic. Allied and German warships fought a number of traditional naval battles, but airplanes came to play an increasingly important part in the fighting at sea. British ships, with the help of planes launched from an aircraft carrier, destroyed a powerful German battleship, the Bismarck, on May 27, 1941. The most famous air battle of the war in Europe took place during the summer and autumn of the previous year. It was known as the Battle of Britain. It got its name from a speech to Parliament by Prime Minister Churchill following the evacuation of British and French forces from Dunkirk.
This is the BBC Home Service. Here is the news. In the House of Commons this afternoon, the Prime Minister, Mr. Churchill, said, "What General Vagar called the Battle of France is over. The Battle of Britain is about to begin."
It was the most extensive aerial bombing yet in the war. It was also the first battle to be fought entirely in the air. German Stuka dive bombers attacked shipping centers, areas of political importance, airfields, and airplane factories. Luftwaffe pilots in their Messerschmitts battled the Hurricanes and Spitfires of the Royal Air Force. While the flying skills of the German and British pilots were well matched, it was ultimately the greater maneuverability of the British Spitfire that won the long months of battle over the English Channel. The British victory in the air helped prevent Operation Sea Lion, a planned German invasion of Britain. In May of 1942, Britain's Royal Air Force carried out an attack on Germany with 1,000 bombers. It was just the first of many bombing runs over Germany and German-occupied areas by the air forces of Britain and the United States. The planes bombed German military and industrial centers. They also bombed civilian targets in an effort to demonstrate to the German people the price of Germany's aggression. The German cities of Cologne, Dresden, and Hamburg suffered widespread destruction. The Allied bombing attacks continued until the war's end in 1945. Hitler's victories in the early months of the war had struck fear into the hearts of people throughout the world. Hitler and his Axis allies had won battle after battle. They had captured most of Western Europe and invaded the Soviet Union. They had seized North Africa, and their submarines controlled the Atlantic. Germany continued to seem strong during the first months after the United States entered the war in Europe. But the situation began to change. German strength and control were greatest in November of 1942. After then, the mighty German military machine began to slow down. Germany and its Axis partner, Italy, suffered serious losses in the first 6 months of 1943. German losses were extremely heavy in the Soviet Union. 160,000 German troops died at Stalingrad, and more than 110,000 surrendered. American and British forces captured 250,000 German and Italian troops in North Africa. Many more thousands were killed or captured in Sicily and the Italian mainland. German submarines were being destroyed in the North Atlantic, allowing more Allied troops and supplies to reach Britain. By the end of 1943, Hitler and his armies no longer seemed so strong. But German forces continued to occupy France, Belgium, and much of the rest of Western Europe. Now the time had come for the Allies to invade German-held Europe from Britain. Allied forces planned the greatest military invasion in history to break the German control of Europe and win the war.
People of Western Europe, a landing was made this morning on the coast of France by troops of the Allied Expeditionary Force. This landing is part of the concerted United Nations plan for the liberation of Europe. Although the initial assault may not have been made in your own country, the hour of your liberation is approaching.
That invasion, the famous D-Day landing on the beaches of Normandy, will be our story next week. Our program was written by David Jarmel. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ender, inviting you to join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English.